Boehner, Dina Guzder, Amy Littlefield, Nermeen Sheikh, Sam Alkoff, Robbie Caron, Hani Massoud, Sharina Nadura, Juan Carlos Davila, and Pedro Rodriguez. Special thanks to Mike DeFilippo, Miguel Noguera, and Becca Staley. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Thanks so much for joining us.
You're listening to WHFR Dearborn, and now it's time for our public affairs show, and we call it the new WHFR Journal.
Our Congress critters can't even do right without turning it into a wrong. They've been rewriting the 1976 Toxic Substances Control Act, which has been so riddled with loopholes that the law itself is toxic to nature and human health.
Okay, we're not going to listen to that right now, folks. This is Jay Koronek here at the new WHFR Journal on a spring break week here at Henry Ford College in Dearborn. And nobody here. Even the administrators have gone home. But, of course, WHFR, and thanks to all of our volunteers, that's right, they're not paid money, they're keeping the traditions going and all the great music that you can't hear elsewhere on the dial. And, of course, this show, the new WHFR Journal, local news and alternative views, that you can't hear anywhere else either on the Detroit radio dial. I'm joined in the studio today by my WHFR news director, John Conroy. So pretty nice day out there, John, driving in from Grosse Ile, right?
Yes, sir, Jay. Real nice day.
Okay. Well, that's thanks for the weather report there. Now, we'll talk about Grosse Ile. The first topic I wanted to cover today, and we have a couple of great commentaries by Jim Hightower also. A little bit you heard there at the start, but we'll get back to those. First of all, the presidential primary results in Michigan statewide. The official results are, although it was definitely an upset in terms of what the pollsters said it would be on the Democratic side. They said Hillary Clinton was going to win by, well, one of them said as much as 25 percentage points more than Bernie Sanders. And it came out finally statewide that Bernie won by 1.5% over Hillary. And they'll split because it was proportionate voting for delegates in Michigan. So it wasn't winner take all. And we've got a lot of delegates, but a little more than half goes to Bernie and the rest go to Hillary. You may think that's either fair or not. On the Republican side, I think Trump got all of the votes because it was winner take all, I think, on the Republican side. We'll check on that. But he only got about 34-35%, but he had more than all the other Republicans running. So you can technically say he's the winner if you think a plurality is a win. I personally don't, but you know, that's the way we have voting. There's such a thing as instant runoff voting, too, when you don't have a majority of people voting. Instant runoff would give you that winner. And I think it's usually done by, and it's kind of interesting, and I don't think it's done too much anywhere in this country, but it is in some other countries. It's where you can vote for first choice and second choice.
Right.
And if you don't, with all the first choices figured up, you don't have a winner there. Who's got a majority, then you just go to the top two and look at the votes for second choice and see how that came out. So it's interesting approach, and it all depends on how you see that. Personally, as I've said on this show, and remember, all opinions in this show, I'm going to save John the trouble today, are not necessarily those opinions of anyone here at Henry Ford College, not faculty, staff, students, or administrators, although we hope some of them might consider them. And my feeling has always been that primaries are a waste of time. And you say, oh, but it's democracy in action. Yeah, but even in Michigan, and it was the largest presidential voting primary turnout ever in the history of Michigan, more people voted for either Democrat or Republican than ever before in the history of a presidential primary in Michigan. And how much was that? Well, I understand it was like over 30%, like 34%, I think, was the official number statewide. In Dearborn, it's about 30%. Dearborn Heights did a little more. The story I saw in Press and Guide, and I didn't see the Dearborn Heights numbers exactly, the breakdown, but they said that Dearborn and Dearborn Heights together had a turnout of about 34%. So that kind of equaled what the state turnout was. But still, think about it. Is that really democracy? 3 out of 10 people who could vote? That's all you're going to get? That's 30% of those who could vote. And you say, well, even in a major election, everybody doesn't vote. Yeah, but at least we get 50 or 60%. And that's like, well, there's the magic word, majority of those registered at least. So that means something to me. But the primaries, you say, well, I know a lot about all those Republicans. Look at all the debates they've had. Those aren't real debates. They're a bunch of sound bites for month after month. And a lot of nasty catcalls back and forth. You know, a lot of insults back and forth. And I don't think that reveals anything about the candidates except maybe who the biggest bully is. I don't think it reveals anything about their intelligence. It's just not the way you would run the presidential office on a day-to-day basis. Oh, hello, President Putin. Go yourself. You know, blank yourself. You know, you don't conduct business that way. And I'm sure, even I hate to mention his name and give him extra publicity, but even Donald Trump, The Art of the Deal, which I haven't read. Sorry, Donald. But the first thing you have to do is respect the other person and find out where they're coming from, so that they give you what you want, but also they get something in return. A deal is give and take. Back and forth. And you can't just tell somebody to go blank themselves at the outset, because that won't allow you to proceed with the deal.
It's not exactly an inviting way to start a conversation.
Well, no. And of course, a lot of people take it as a total insult. No. Some people live their lives by insulting and using obscene or indecent words, which we can't use on WHFR, which we have rules that we will not use because we choose not to. Imagine in this society. But yes, there's FCC rules that might fine us if they catch us, but we don't think that's the way to be an educated person. And after all, we are licensed to Henry Ford College, and you know, education gives you tools of thinking and word choice that supposedly will help in conflict resolution, that will help you accomplish your goals, your deals, or whatever, without violence. And without upset too much. So there's a lot of things to be said about that vote. And I've got a breakdown here somewhere about Dearborn. Okay, where is it? This is the Downriver breakdown. Okay. Oh, it's on my little day planner here. Okay. Dearborn. And had about, there it is, it had exactly 17,449 people voting. That's 29.8% of the registered voters in Dearborn, in the city limits of Dearborn. We're known as a Democratic area in general. So it turned out that 62.5% of the people chose to vote Democratic in the Democratic primary. Whether they're Democrats or not, of course, you could cross over. Even if you normally vote Republican, you could have voted on the Democratic side and vice versa. But in the Republican side, Republican primary, that was only 37.5%. That's the other remaining percentage. So 2-to-1 Democrat over Republican in terms of the way they chose to vote this time around in choosing between these two primaries. And of course, there were no third parties listed. There will be third party candidates for president on the Michigan ballot in November. At least the Green Party and Libertarian Party will be added. And you say, well, they weren't in the primaries. How did they get to have a candidate? They just choose it in their own political conventions. Who better? And this is my argument against the cost and the hassle of primaries, which, by the way, Canada doesn't do. Canada, our neighbor to the north, doesn't do primaries. And the whole election period, by law, can only be 6 weeks long now. They just extended it. Only 6 weeks to campaign. No political ads on TV until 6 weeks before. And no debates, Nothing. You got 6 weeks. And get down to business, folks, and then vote. And of course, their debates in Canada, for example, the last presidential debate I saw, that it was three nights in a row on CBC. No commercials. Okay. Uninterrupted. 4 hours long. All four candidates from four political parties in Canada got equal time, and they all spoke answers that were 2 to 5 to 10 minutes long. Okay, and this is like a formal debate. If I mean, I've been to debates in college. I've been part of debates in college. I know what the rules are of real, logical, intelligent debates that are used to solve problems in a rational way, although, you know, an aggressive way, as precise way as possible in terms of words and so on. And supposedly Ted Cruz knows all about this too, because he was a debater in college, and they didn't follow the same rules at all in college. And he excelled at that. I'd love to see him in an extended legal debate. I mean, I don't agree with anything I hear right now from him, but I'm saying I'd love, if he's such a great debater in the traditional, logical, rational sense, at extended length, bring it on. You know, let me see that. I'd love to see Donald Trump at length. Well, actually, I did watch his speech where he brought himself into the race. What's that called? His coming out speech. No, that's something else. It's, you know, where he said, I'm going to run for president. Okay. And I actually was able to see, and I'm not sure on what channel, maybe it was on the internet, and it was over an hour long. You know, he came down in some shopping center. He came down this fancy elevator, and then he gave this hour and a half speech. And it was ranting and raving and a lot of stupid things. I mean, for an intelligent guy, a lot of things off to the side, tangential issues. And then I saw a full hour one time when he was in Michigan. This was like 4 or 5 or 6 months ago at the early stage he came here. He went up to the place where there's an outlet store near Flint. Before the Flint water thing broke, he was out there at the outlet center or whatever. And they have a big facility, I guess. And that didn't make any sense either for an hour. So I really think that these candidates, if you got to listen to them extended time, as I did for Bernie Sanders this Tuesday, I was at his speech here in Dearborn the Ford Performing Arts and Community and Performing Arts Center. And by golly, it was great. Heard a whole hour of just him speaking about a wide range of issues. And I'll tell you about that in a minute. But let's try to analyze the breakdown here. In Dearborn, on the Democratic side, Sanders got 63% of the vote, and Hillary Clinton got only 36.5%. So it's almost 2-1 favor of Sanders over Clinton. Now, in Detroit area, in Wayne County, I think Clinton edged him out. I don't have the Wayne County numbers there. And the major category, voting category, that after the fact they analyzed, was that Clinton in Detroit got 80% of the black votes. African-American voters chose her 80% over Bernie Sanders 20%, those that voted Democratic, of course, and most of the African-Americans in Detroit have voted Democratic in the past. So that was Hillary Clinton's big win, is that particular category, and in Detroit. And I have talked to a few African-American people. I've heard a few on radio calling into other talk shows and that, and saying, well, I didn't know much about Bernie, but I knew that Hillary's husband had been president. So she must know a lot. Well, if you don't know anything about one candidate, then how can you say the other candidate is better? You know what I'm saying? I'm just saying, it's you're voting for someone. Yes, you know a little bit about them indirectly, but you don't. You're saying you're too busy to find out anything about the other candidate. They could be the best candidate in the world. They could be the worst candidate. But if you don't know, then your vote doesn't mean very much. Like, since I don't know, I'm going to vote for the person I kind of know. That's not much of a vote, in my humble opinion. And I encourage not just African-Americans, but everybody, try to learn who all the candidates are, Republican, Democrat. And if you can wait a little while to jump to your contusion, find out who the Green Party candidates are going to be and the Libertarian parties. They'll have their national conventions at the end in May, in early June, and we'll know who their candidates are going to be. And by golly, they'll be on the ballot in Michigan. You can vote for them for president if you want to. And you say, they can't win. Okay, well, I've got a response to that. Yep, it's 2 minutes, but here's 2 minutes out of the beginning of Bernie Sanders' speech. Okay, from this last Tuesday right here in Dearborn. And yes, there was a man with his grandson sitting right next to me, who, and we'd been sitting about an hour and a half before the speech got started. So you'll hear his grandson saying some things right next to me. So, but it's not great, but it shows you the fervor. And Bernie is actually, if I may call him Bernie, Senator Sanders is actually making a very good point about the chance for dreams to come true. I thought, in fact, didn't Obama campaign on the audacity thing?
Oh, yeah.
Hope, you know?
Hope and
just make it happen, you know? Well, anyway, here's Bernie Sanders from Tuesday in Dearborn, just 2 minutes of his hour-long speech. And the first word, which is kind of cut off because they didn't start recording right at the very, it's the word change. So think change, and then here comes the speech. And it's not playing. Well, that's not fun. I wonder why not. Well, okay. Well, let me summarize it for you. It says it's there, but it's not there.
Not showing it.
So let me try another player of some sort. The idea is, he pointed out first in speech that people, well, in America here, you know, women didn't have the right to vote at the beginning. And, you know, it wasn't in the Constitution. Only men could vote. And of course, slaves couldn't vote. But the states were apportioned that as in terms of counting population, that five slaves would count as three, even though they couldn't vote. But the population of the state for, you know, districts and so on, you would count five slaves as three. So, gee, that's something, right?
Just, again, less than one human being, right?
Yeah, but you can't vote as a human being. You're only 60% of a human being, even for counting population. So, pretty awful, that first Constitution. People always, you know, talk about that whole issue of... you know, what's, we want to get back to the Constitution, and then I always wonder, what the heck is that all about, you know, because it doesn't seem to be such a great idea. Okay, I'm still making one more effort here. All right. It won't play. Yes, it's playing. Okay, well, why can't we hear it? Oh, I know. I must have hit a key. Hang on. No? Let's try it one more time.
Change never takes place from the top on down. It always takes place from the bottom on up. And if you think back historically at the struggle for workers' rights, you remember that workers came together. Some of them were beaten, some were jailed, some were killed. But they said, you know what, workers are entitled to collective bargaining. They're entitled to negotiate a contract. We will form a union. Yeah. Took place here. And as Keith indicated, do you remember, we often forget, In 1924 is when women got the right to vote, less than 100 years ago. Now, how did that happen? You think it happened because some president signed something? It happened because women and their male allies struggled for decade after decade. Some died, some went to jail, some were on hunger strikes. And they said, you know what? In America, women will not be treated as second-class citizens. Civil rights movement, it has been going on for hundreds of years. were African Americans before slavery, after slavery, and their white allies said that in the United States of America, racism and bigotry and segregation are not acceptable. And hundreds of thousands and millions of people stood up and fought back. We still have a long way to go, but that is how change takes place. Yeah.
So there it was. You can tell the excitement. The place was packed. It holds about 1,200 seats, and I thought they were all filled with standing room only, and we had press all over the place and security guards, you know, the Secret Service guard all of these presidential candidates, and they were all walking around there in their stiff suits with the little earphone intercom things in their ears. And ready to shoot anybody that they thought, no, I'm just, you know, but they're just on lookout, you know, as they should be. And I had to go through like a TSA gate. They set up gates. So 1,200 people had to go through these gate checks, you know, the magnetic portals.
Right.
And we had to empty our pockets. We didn't have to remove our belts or our shoes.
Well, that's a good
which
thing.
Was nice.
Yep.
And we wouldn't have had to take off our watches from our wrists either, but I did, and then I couldn't get it back on, and I held up the line. Oh, I have a little teeny 1-inch long knife on my keychain, and yep, they took it.
They took that away.
Because 1-inch long knife, I mean, that can do serious
damage.
You're
going to do some serious damage there.
Yeah, absolutely. Even though they have all these guards, you'll never get anywhere near Bernie, you know, and so on. But, and it's a deterrent, you know. I don't think anybody in Dearborn was going to do anything to Bernie. That's just the way our society is these days. We're running scared when we shouldn't. There's really not enough crime or terrorism for anybody to be afraid of. But all the candidates are making a lot of it, so it must be happening somewhere, right? So everybody's real tense, and there's really, if you look at the numbers, it's nothing to be afraid of, either in the Middle East or over here. Although the people in the Middle East are so messed up, in certain countries, they're fighting each other. I mean, their own people are fighting each other, and there's religious differences, Sunni and Shiite, and so on. You know, it's just... Oh, my goodness. Okay, so anyways, a lot of excitement Tuesday, and some people, and one of the reasons they said there was excitement, one of the reasons that happened, they said, was because the Arab American News last Friday in the issue, their new issue that just came out last week Friday, is they endorsed Bernie Sanders for president. And they say that, I have that statement right here, the Arab American News cannot in good conscience endorse any of the GOP candidates, although in the past we have endorsed Republicans in the primary and general elections. And they say we encourage Arab American Republicans to show up to the poll on March 8th and cast their vote for their candidate of choice. It's really wonderful. Did the Press and Guide in Dearborn have any endorsements? No. Did the Times Herald in Dearborn have any endorsements? No. I mean, in my mind, if they were running a good operation and had a lot of reporters covering the news of the day, they could get their staff together and decide who they would endorse. Because they know a lot more than we do, a lot more that often they can't even put in their stories for reasons of libel or some other things. I always appreciated those 50 years ago when news organizations had guts enough to do endorsements, especially local organizations. So thank you very much, Arab American News. You have done a service, which is true journalism. I've heard of some of your endorsements in the past for local elections, and I didn't agree with them. And I'm not saying that I agree with this because I'm not at WHFR here. We don't take sides. But I'm glad you stated who you believed people should vote for, who is the better candidate for the Arab American community, for Dearborn, and for the United States of America. And it's not just they said, vote this way. They didn't say that. They gave their reasons. The reasons go on for like 3-4 paragraphs. And they had a whole nother statement about the Republican side, too. and what's wrong with all the Republican candidates. So there's two stories there. One is like an anti-endorsement explanation, and one is the endorsement explanation. As long as I'm talking about them, so good for them. But this is late-breaking news, folks. It was reported just this morning, posted to the Arab American News website, because it just happened early this morning. Two men attempted to break into the Arab American News office early Friday morning. The majority of the staff was at the office. 11 people. They've got 11 people at the office. They actually employ that many people. Maybe some are volunteers.
Some are.
But that really puts the Press and Guide and Times Herald to shame, because I'm sure they don't have that many people. I mean, some of them might have been people that just distribute the paper throughout the city, for free, by the way. Arab American News is free. But this was at 2:33 this morning when this happened. Staff members originally believed it to be gunshots because they heard these multiple bangs coming from the back of their building, as the back door had been damaged by what appeared to be a bullet hole. The staff immediately rushed to a safe area of the office, and the police were contacted. Security footage revealed that the two men were lingering near the office minutes before they attempted to break through the back door. They peeked through the window where the majority of staff was visible, yet still proceeded with their attempt. So I guess they just wanted to scare them or frighten them or something. And it wasn't a bullet hole. It doesn't look like one to me, but certainly they did take cover. So Arab American News reporter Hassan Khalife says, "We don't know why these men came here, but what matters is that everybody's safe." Khalife suspected the subjects were armed. He said, "They knew we were inside. There were 11 people in the newsroom. They wouldn't confront us if they did not have guns. Dearborn police arrived at the scene and are conducting an investigation." Publisher Osama Sablani said, "No matter what the motive of the suspects was, they will not affect the paper's stances." He said, quote, "This cowardly attack will not deter us from continuing our journalistic mission. We have been here for 31 years. Did you know that, folks? We have endured many threats in the past, and they have not moved us from continuing to report the truth. We were fortunate that no one was harmed," unquote. Suspects drove away with a black Chevrolet Monte Carlo. If you have information about that investigation, please call the Dearborn Police.
That was at 2:33
this morning.
This morning.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And there were 11 people
in the office.
In the office at that time of day.
Yeah. Huh. Well, because Friday is the day that their new edition comes out, both online. And that's why this story went online at 3:57.
Okay.
So, I mean, they just typed it into the web right there in the office an hour and 20 minutes after the break-in or the damage occurred.
So there were folks, it was timely.
Yeah, right, but there, it was the day they would be together and getting the paper ready for press to be printed.
Yeah.
In fact, the print edition technically, I think, would start with tomorrow's date. I'm not sure about that, but I think the new edition starts with tomorrow's date. Yeah.
This is last week's.
Right. Last week goes through today, the 11th.
5 through 11.
Right.
Yep.
So that's why they were working so hard. They had to get the story to the printer because it takes time to print all those copies and distribute them around Dearborn for the Saturday.
Yeah.
So look for them at your favorite location. Certainly they're at the Dearborn Administrative Center, which is closed on Saturday, but they're also at the Ford Community and Performing Arts Center and elsewhere around town. Yeah, John, you've got the endorsement there. Yeah. Some of the national newspapers, including Democracy Now!, the great national review of topics by Amy Goodwin that we feature here right before the show, because it's brand new this morning. They do it from 8 to 9 every Friday morning, and we carry it from 12 to 1, the only station in Detroit doing that. And some of the national commenters said that, Bernie's win in Michigan was due to the Arab American vote, as if that was it. No. If you look at the breakdown, yes, there were African Americans, no doubt, that voted for Bernie, but typically, when 40% of the Dearborn is African American resident, Arab American residents, 40% of Dearborn right now legally has 40% Arab American residents. And I don't know how many of them are Democrats or not, but of course we have the highest percentage here. But statewide, I don't think those numbers would make up the difference for Bernie. In the places he primarily won the biggest, he It was outstate over Hillary. It was interesting. I looked at that breakdown. There was a map that came with some Free Press report or whatever of state breakdown, and his biggest wins were all outstate because he campaigned there, and Hillary didn't, by the way, and I think that might have made some difference. Although, where is it here? Is it in the Press and Guide? Did I save that part of the edition? Oh, I guess I didn't bring it with me. Oh, here it is. Yes. John didn't probably see that. Bill Clinton came to Dearborn.
Oh, yeah.
On Monday. Mm-hmm. He was here.
He was here.
And he was at, and where was he? He was at the Westbourne Market there.
He was at Westbourne, yeah.
Yeah. And they have a couple pictures in the Press and Guide from this last Wednesday of him there. I didn't even know he was there. I don't know who they told. Who did they tell he was going to be there? And why would he go to a Westbourne Market? Of course, a lot of people go there to shop.
Right, right.
So, of course, you would automatically run into people there.
Good hot soup, you know.
Well, he's got a great shot there, whoever took
Debbie
the pictures.
Dingell, yeah.
That he's, well, he's there with Debbie, right? Yeah. But he's also talking to two dogs that were in a car. That's a cute picture. But
yeah.
I'm sorry to tell you this, Bill, but dogs can't vote. Now, their owners can, so yeah. Maybe the owner, well, he's nice to dogs, so
maybe he associates
I'll
himself.
Give him my vote. You know, Hillary said in the comment, one of the Democratic debates recently with Bernie, she said, you know, I'm not, or without Bernie, in the last couple of days, she said, I'm not a natural politician. And yet how many times has she, you know, given political speeches and campaigned for office? Oh, my gosh. And even alongside Bill. She said, but I'm not a natural politician like Bill.
Right.
And I have to say, I met him only once when he was campaigning first for president. He came right here to then Henry Ford Community College. We waited for him for an hour. It was in January or something. We had to wait outside. The college wouldn't let us wait inside. And he had in Detroit, this was his only stop then, and he had set up an interview, an extended interview with the Detroit Free Press right here in our administration building. So that was important because that would get in the Free Press paper and we'd get all the, you know, a full page or two of this in-depth interview with Bill Clinton, this candidate for president. And he, instead of going right in and meeting with him when he got here, he stood outside with us. And it was only a small group of 20, 30 people. And he talked to us for 20 minutes answering our questions and shaking hands. Oh, my God. And this guy was, and not that's a nice thing to do for a candidate to give you that kind of time in the freezing cold weather and making the Free Press wait.
Making them
oh,
wait.
My God. You know, but charisma, yeah. I understand why Monica Lewinsky and other women have been up close. This guy has got that magnetic personality. Call it what you will. He was, and I'm sure he still is from what I understand, very, very magnetic. You know, if you met him, you'd be mesmerized, you know, not hypnotized necessarily, but, you know, he is an intelligent guy, of course, he's president, my gosh, and he's doing a lot of good things through his foundation, which his daughter, Chelsea, is running right now. She's gotten promoted up, so
yep.
She's... actually in charge. He still gives speeches, of course, but I was just so surprised because maybe I would have gone to see him. I didn't hear anything about this. I don't know. Did they only tell certain Democrats, or they just hope that everybody at the market would just, you know, make a little mini event? But that's why didn't he give a speech somewhere? Why didn't he? Again, you said maybe he just needed to pick up a sandwich from the deli or something.
Well, today's day and age, once he arrived somewhere, I'm sure the word got out that, you know, President Clinton is here, and let's go see him.
They certainly told the photographer of the Press and Guide that he was coming there.
But I also noticed that he's talking to the dogs, and you mentioned before Monica Lewinsky. Maybe that dog behavior goes back and forth a little bit.
I'm not saying she's a dog. She seems like a very nice person. In fact, she has one of the most popular TED Talks.
No, I'm saying he's a dog.
I know. I see. He can speak to dogs.
Right, he can relate, you know, with that kind of idea.
Yeah, he's been in the doghouse before, right?
Yes.
Okay, with Hillary, I'm sure. And you know, I hear some, it's crazy, because people, there's a book called The Myth of the Rational Voter, and it's been out for years, one of the great political nonfiction works, and based on research, and that is that people, when they go in the voting booth, they finally vote, that they say afterwards, for the craziest of reasons. They might go in with a list or something, but then they vote for somebody for a reason that just pops into their head, and it's usually very emotional. So I've heard some people in the past that, I'm voting for Hillary, it's a woman saying this, because Bill was so mean to her. What? Yeah, but if she's going to be president, does that mean she deserves it? I mean, because Bill had some relationships, whether you call it sex or not. I did not have sex with that woman. That's what Bill Clinton said, because supposedly oral sex wasn't sex.
Right.
I'm sorry, to him, or in some dictionary he was looking at the time. But I have to say, and in fact, even my daughter, the teacher now, she met him when he was president. He came to University of Michigan Dearborn for a speech, and she just sort of was a student there, and she just wasn't in line, but he started coming through, shaking hands, you know, to get to the auditorium. And she just happened to be all of a sudden at the aisle there that they had created, you know, and there he was. So he shook her hand, and she wasn't a Clinton supporter or anything at the time, really. And, oh my God, Dad, I know what you meant about that charisma, you know. It just, and it's not just you meet the president, because I think there could be some presidents, they don't have that charisma in person, but they're good in many other ways. I mean,
well, he got some votes back in the day for playing the sax on the Tonight Show.
Well, he did. So, all the sax players, jazz players, thought that was cool. Donald Trump, of course, knows how to play television. I mean, there's the charisma of meeting somebody in person that may not come across on television, but there's also called the telegenic personality, the person who comes across who looks great on television, two-dimensional, low-res screen usually, of course, what do you say and how do you say it? The tone of voice and the words you choose matters then too, and Donald Trump knows to play the soundbite, you know, and he knows how to throw his arms around and so on. That's not a reason to be president, so whether they're pretty on TV or charismatic in person, that shouldn't matter, you know. I wasn't up close enough to Bernie to say he was charismatic in that same sort of way, but he gave a rousing speech, and everybody thought it was great. And you say, well, it was all Arab Americans there, weren't they, Jay? Because they, you know, they look different than the rest of us. I'm a white person, if you didn't know that. Caucasian. I thought it was a mix of young and old. I didn't see many African Americans, but this is Dearborn, and I'm not sure if they normally come to Dearborn or if they found out about it or not. But if I had to identify profiling, which is a nasty thing, Arab Americans, I don't know, dark skin, complexion, whatever, I don't, hair color. No, I would say it wasn't a majority African Americans. I know they're 40% of the Dearborn population anyway, so maybe it was 30 or 40% that I might be able to identify, but I don't care about that stuff anyway.
Right.
That's not. But you might say, well, it was all Muslims there or something. Bernie is not a racist. And his speech did mention significantly, and especially to this audience in Dearborn, that he's not against anybody, you know. He's not against African Americans. He's not against Muslims. It's all what you do and how you do it. You know, he wants to bring people together. Hillary has said that too. It's interesting that no Republicans are saying we'd like to unify the country. Well, 35 minutes on that. One thing about Downriver. Downriver did vote a little bit more. Well, a lot of the communities voted for in Bernie, but not as much as in Dearborn, where it was 2-for-1. The Downriver total, in fact, because of a couple big imbalances here, was 22,600 votes for Hillary Clinton, and 21,300 for Sanders. So Downriver basically went in the Republican side, it was the same thing. Was number one, and then Kasich. Although I understand statewide, Cruz came in number two in Michigan. But in this area, Kasich came in number two. Kind of interesting. I just wonder if some Democrats crossed over, and he's the closest thing to a moderate Republican, you know. But in particular, you might say, well, where did Clinton do better than Sanders? Taylor, 3,600 votes for Clinton, 3,200 for Sanders. Romulus, big win for Clinton there, 2,600 votes for Clinton, and Sanders only 1,500. River Rouge, 877 for Clinton, and Sanders 338. Gros Isle Township, your hometown,
yes.
John, 710 for Clinton and 704 for Sanders.
But a bigger statistic on Gross Hill to me is, and it follows our trend, is that there were 2,100 Republican votes versus 1,400 Democratic votes. Mm-hmm. And that usually is the trend when we have elections, national or right. otherwise. You know.
The other community that was more Clinton than Sanders by a big margin, Ecorse, 1,110 for Clinton and only 438 for Sanders. Now, again, I haven't seen the demographic breakdown, but I think Ecorse and River Rouge have a higher percentage of African Americans certainly than Dearborn,
right?
And that could be that as I did say that statistic that Hillary gets about 80% of the African American vote in Detroit, and maybe that's again because Hillary Clinton does represent the mainstream establishment Democratic Party.
Yep.
Something you know you can count on if you haven't learned a lot about Bernie Sanders. Maybe if you have and you don't like him, that's one thing, but a lot of people in Dearborn, after we met him, after we heard him for an hour, were very enthused. They liked everything he said. And as I said, the Arab American News did endorse him. That's before the election. So it could have had an effect also on voting if newspaper endorsement does affect people. I think he was just saying the right things. And that's why most people voted for him. Okay. Still time to register to vote in November, folks. So if you're not registered and you say, gee, maybe I'd like to express myself on that, and I don't know who I'm going to vote for, but okay, fine. You know, you've got time to look into it. There might even be some proposals on the ballot that you might want to vote for, you know, social issues of one sort or another. There were some petitions circulating while I was standing in line at the Ford Performing Arts Center here in Dearborn, and there's more going around now too. I'm not sure if a legalization of marijuana proposal will get on the ballot. The state of Michigan legislature is now trying to pass a bill making it harder, even more difficult, to get a petition on the ballot than it is now, and it's almost impossible now, even if you pay a lot of people to go out and get registered voters, of course, to sign. You don't pay people to sign, but I'm saying you pay the people to do the, what do they call it, canvassing? No, whatever. The petition circulators.
Yeah.
To be a circulator, you can pay people to do that, and they have to get legitimate signatures. You can't pay those people, but they're trying to make it harder to circulate petitions, and Michigan has one of the highest percentages and shortest amount of time to get anything on the ballot. So apparently the legislature, well, it seems like they don't want to do very much, and they certainly don't want us to participate directly in opposing them. And as I've said before, and it's certainly true on major issues of social importance in Michigan, the majority of us take one side and the legislators take another side. And so they don't want democracy in Michigan because they're not voting that way, you know, in Lansing. And he said, well, how did they get there? Gerrymandering, okay? Gerrymandering. It'd take a massive effort to get the established majority, Republicans, to not be reelected, those that are up for reelection in November. But it still could happen. So I'm just saying, get registered. Okay.
It sure puts out the wrong message. We want to get people to vote
yep.
more,
yep.
not less.
Yep.
So.
And you got to keep participating along the way. Okay,
yes.
A couple big issues coming up here. Bernie Sanders. Okay, not Bernie. I promised Jim Hightower. This is the one I wanted to play. We only have time for one now. Sorry, Jim. Okay. So listen to... this commentary from Jim Hightower, a great progressive voice. He lives in Texas, but he's known nationally. Ralph Nader even said they thought Jim should run for president, but oh well.
War is hell. Unless, of course, you happen to be a global corporate peddler of rockets, drones, bombs, and all the other hellish weaponry of military conflict. In that case, war is literally manna from hell. So bring it on. Indeed, it seems as if Beelzebub himself is in charge these days, with U.S. military forces enmeshed in at least 135 countries in 2015 alone. Plus, such chicken hawks as Donald Trump and Ted Cruz maniacally are beating their flabby chests and screeching for even more military adventurism. This perpetual warmongering is music to the ears of the CEOs and big investors of the war machine, for it means a windfall of perpetual profits for them. In a rare admission of their war profiteering ethic, a group of major military contractors spoke late last year about how splendid war is. In tapes of speeches at a wealthy investors' conference, top weapon makers exulted about the spreading horror of ISIS and escalating wars in the Middle East and Africa. Hailing the rising conflict in Syria and Turkey, for example, a Lockheed Martin honcho enchanted the potential investors with the happy news that Lockheed's profits would, quote, enjoy an intangible lift because of the dynamics of that war's environment and sales of our products in that theater. Raytheon CEO chimed in that his corporation was upbeat because of, quote, a significant uptick for defense solutions across the board in multiple countries in the Middle East. And all of these masters of war celebrated the joyous news that Congress had just delivered a $607 billion budget to the Pentagon, meaning more sales and more profit for war investors. "We think we did very well," exclaimed one. This is Jim Hightower saying, many go to war and die, but a few go to war and thrive. So see, it balances out.
Hightower's commentary is brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown. From Wall Street to Washington, this monthly newsletter reveals who's doing what to whom and why. Check it out, HightowerLowdown.org.
And we're back with more of the new WHFR Journal for today, and it is Friday, the March 11th, 2016. John Conroy and myself, Jay Koronick, here with you. Looking at the Dearborn Papers, we've got to go quickly on a couple of big issues. The biggest political thing was, surprise to me, but there it is in the Dearborn Press and Guide. Dearborn Consul President Susan DeBaggia is going to run for 19th District Judge in November election. Okay? So she's not going to be Consul President anymore. And you might say, well, why doesn't she want to be Consul President? And I think, and I don't know, she wants to become a judge. And, of course, she is a lawyer already, so that would be one step up in a legal career, I think, usually, to go from being an attorney to being a judge. You don't have to worry about clients. They come to you as a judge, you know. All those cases are just there. And also, Susan DeBaggia right now is serving on a lot of committees and boards. She co-chairs the Dearborn Education Foundation and so on. Also, you know, as consul president, when she first ran for the consul, I mean, she didn't know she'd get be the top vote getter. She ran a great campaign, obviously. But as top vote getter, she's not only has to moderate the consul meetings, which sometimes have gotten contentious,
yeah,
like Ted Tefelsky versus the mayor and so on, but also protesters came a couple weeks back and caused a ruckus. They had to adjourn the meeting rather than continue, in fact. But she's got to go to all these other ribbon-cutting ceremonies and, if you will, chicken dinners as a campaigner. It needs re-election. So once she gets a district judge, they're often re-elected just because their name is the incumbent on the ballot. So she didn't have to campaign much after the first year. What was most interesting to me, first of all, someone who's already running for this, who's also not the incumbent, is an Abby Bazzi. She is a managing attorney, another attorney, but at the UAW Ford Legal Services plan. She's been employed at the UAW Legal Services for nearly 20 years. So she's running, as is Susan DeBaggia, but they're running again for the seat that is now held by District Judge William Hulkran. His six-year term is up at the end of the year. Now, if you remember Dearborn Politics, Hulkran has been in sort of a battle, or at least his wife, his new wife, was fired from an administrative role in the 19th District Court office. Oh my gosh, what was it, 7 or 8 years ago? And she sued supposedly for unjust termination. I thought Summers had a strong case, but that ruling, I think, is pretty much settled, and it's a big financial settlement. I think it's around $750,000 with interest now. The question has not been resolved, to my knowledge, about who's going to pay that. The city of Dearborn or Mark Summers. Well, Mark Summers himself didn't have $750,000, so they'll never get that from him. His wages will be garnished forever if it comes to that. So I, Judge William Holcren was first supported and got his job decades ago by Mayor Guido. Okay? Okay, Michael Guido. And they were close buddy buddies, and Holcren had been the city attorney, city of Dearborn attorney. Except he lost so many cases, I was saying, without knowing any sort of facts here, but I was speculating wildly that you got to get Holcren out of the city attorney office because he keeps losing all these cases and we keep losing millions and millions of dollars. Of course, he was trying to defend various police problems. I mean, there was police interactions and high-speed car chases, and kind of hard to defend some of those, I guess. But nonetheless, he did get one of the three judgeships in the 19th District Court here in Dearborn, and he was dating, he was living with his now wife, and anyway, Summers lost the case, and or the city lost the case. So I'm just saying, though, if DiBaggio was an establishment politician here in Dearborn, and we know she supported Mayor O'Reilly in just about every way and had his, I think, endorsement for office, too, when she first ran, she's going against a man who formerly was really closely tied into the mayor's office and the Dearborn city political establishment. And she's chosen to run against him. And being so popular, or at least proven popular for the last council election, I think she's got a really good chance. Now, he may choose, we don't know yet, not to run. Because if you got $750 million coming to you, $750,000. Did I say $750 million?
That's a little more.
Yeah.
A little
no.
high.
But still, $750,000 is still a lot of money. You could retire on that pretty nicely if you've been saving your pennies other ways, too. And I don't know. But it's going to be an interesting race. You say, what about Summers? Well, he's still got 2 years to go on his term. And so that's that. But I thought that was amazing. That means that the next time city council elections happen, and I'm not sure if any are happening in November, I would think a few have to, but don't they rotate or something? Is this the year, the presidential election year, or do they do it the off year? So maybe if she's elected there, they have a vacancy, and then they go to the next highest vote getter from the last election. That's the way Dearborn does it. So I don't know who that is. Be interesting to find out, just because that is a consequence. Who do you get? But then the number two vote getter becomes the head of the council, while Susan's appointment has to come in as a newbie. So it's Ted Tefalsky. Tom. Is that Tom?
Tom.
I always get his name wrong. Yeah. And that's because he's never come on the show. We've invited him in the past over a decade or so. I think more than half a dozen times. Not recently. But he hasn't. He's been too busy. Okay. And by the way, Susan DiBaggio never was able to accommodate the show because I'm such a tough interviewer. You know. Really, just, nasty language and everything that I don't do. But that would mean that Tefalsky's up there at the top of the console, and he's going one-on-one with the mayor without anybody else being a referee. So he's back to where he was before as head of the council until the next election figures out who gets the highest votes. But that's a big story in Dearborn that Susan DiBaggio is running for 19th District Court in the election this fall. A couple events coming up here. Sunday, there's a women's expo. So if you are a woman, you know who you are. Yes, I'm not making fun of that. It's a great expo. They do it every year. It's going to be this Sunday at the Ford Community and Performing Arts Center. And I got the story buried somewhere here. There it is. Okay. Just want to give you the times. 10 a.m. it opens and closes at 5. And the first 250 guests receive a shopping bag filled with goodies and deals. Tickets are only $3 at the door. Children younger than 12 attend free. Or you can nab a dollar off coupon from the website showforwomen.com. Of course, parking is free there. So it's a 13th annual show, annual Women's Expo. So a lot of services and products for women and kids, too. Leukemia Foundation is going to be there. And it's going to be more than 100 exhibitors. Wow. So it's going to be a big deal. Women's annual Women's Expo in Dearborn at the Ford Community and Performing Arts Center, 10 to 5 this Sunday. Okay. What else here? I wondered, and I'm going to ask the mayor about this too, but I wonder about the new, we used to call it building services in Dearborn, and I know Mayor Guido mentioning him before, in his last three State of the City addresses, he said, we're going to reorganize that department. Needs reorganization. He never did it. After 3 years of saying he was going to do it each year, he never did it. And Mayor O'Reilly's done it, I think at least four or five times now, one way or the other. And, of course, there were a couple corruption schemes and a couple investigations by the FBI also caused, pointed out the need for reorganization. Well, the new Building Services Department in Dearborn has got a long name. It's called Property Maintenance and Development Services. Property Maintenance Development Services. And so people wanting to make improvements and invest in homes and businesses in Dearborn, will experience, I'm reading from the press release, even better customer service with the reorganization of two critical city departments. Okay, and so Mayor O'Reilly got approval from the Dearborn City Council. And so the Residential Services Department has been moved into the Property Maintenance and Development Services Department, PMDS.
Yep.
Is that a disease? No. I'm thinking of something else. The PMDS department will continue to be responsible for inspecting homes that are for sale and for inspecting and registering rental property. Now, it has different divisions. The Neighborhood Services/Sanitation Division will also continue to be responsible for compliance of and education about property maintenance codes. And some services formerly housed in the Economic and Community Development Department are also going to be changing to the PMDS. They're going to be doing building permits for both commercial and residential properties.
A kind of consolidation, if you will.
I think so.
Yeah.
It says, in order to prove stability and continuing of staffing in these important areas, 10 part-time positions gradually will be condensed. And I think this is a great idea. They'll be condensed into 6 full-time positions.
Mm-hmm.
Because people who are working full-time, well, they get benefits. Okay. But they're going to be people really doing the job in a professional way. They'll probably even be encouraged, if they're full-time employees getting those benefits, to do the job better than any two or three part-time people, just because it's their full-time responsibility. They don't have to go to a second job.
They have more personal stake in the whole
right.
Affair.
Very personal and professional stake.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
This is a great idea to improve this department, that they're going to convert the 10 part-time positions into 6 full-time employees. Now, they probably will still be spending a little more money on that, but I think that's an excellent idea for this very, very important area, which is now the PMDS, Property Management and Development Services Department in Dearborn. Wow. Now, by the way, I mentioned the Economic and Community Development Department. They are going to keep that name, and Barry Murray will remain its director, and they'll still be doing all kinds of business recruitment, grant admission, administration, and the housing division, too, will be there, and coordinating the activities of West Dearborn Downtown Development Authority and the one in East Dearborn, too. Did you know there's a Dix Verner Corridor Authority and a Warren Avenue Corridor Authority? Wow, we got all these authorities. You know who to ask a question to, because all these people are...
They're there.
Authorities, and they're there, yes. Okay. So, but that's been a story. It's been out there for about a month, and we've kicked it around. It doesn't sound very exciting, but hopefully all that's really going to matter. Well, only a couple of minutes to go, and oh my goodness, Kitty Love's already in the studio, ready for Highway 61 to start at 2 o'clock, 4 hours of blues. Kitty Love for the first 2 hours, and then Mike Holloway and Go With The Flow blues show starts at 4 o'clock. You probably got something, John. You got a lot of notes there, and I can give you 3 minutes. Go ahead.
Okay, here we go.
sorry.
This Thursday, this coming Wednesday, March 16th, will be the St. Patrick's Day buffet going on, a celebration. Lunch and dinner at the 5101 restaurant. Lots of very fine goodies to be had. This also, this Monday, these are student programs happening at the out of Henry Ford. We will have a Yemen Student Association bake sale, 10 to 2 in the Student Center. Different than baking and anything food-wise is Tuesday the 15th. There'll be a National Society for Leadership and Success speaker broadcast. This will be from 6:30 to 9 at the Berry Amphitheater at the Mazzara Center. Also, tonight, continuing to support a little bit of Joe's Top Dog, is their anniversary tonight of their jazz nights.
Oh, yeah.
And Johnny Trudeau will be the featured performer with the Rich Michaels Trio that's performing every week on every Friday night.
And we're happy to mention that schedule because there's no cover to get in.
That's so right, yeah.
If you're already thinking of food or beverage going out, again, not too many venues that have great entertainment like this jazz series has become at Joe's Top Dog Coney Island. Who would think? They're on Michigan Avenue, east of Schaefer Road on the north side of the street. And about 6 to 9 p.m., right?
6 to 9, yep.
Okay, so it's an early thing, too, folks. You don't have to stay up late to go to Top Dog.
Yes.
And I have just a little thing here. In Dearborn, it's very important, and of course, the weather's getting warm now. If you got a chance to rake your leaves that you need to from your flower beds or whatever before they rot everything under it, because it's certainly been getting warm several times, the collection begins this Monday. Curbside yard waste, and you have to put it in specially identified containers, but it'll start now and go all the way through December 9th, on your regular trash day. So mine happens to be Monday, so I've got to get raking this weekend to get some of that rotten leaves up. But I know it's supposed to rain a little bit too, but who cares? Yep. So hope everybody has fun out there. We had fun with politics this week and in Michigan, and it's always going to be interesting to see how that pans out. This is a big election year. I hope you can all stay in touch with us and read the local papers, Times Herald, Press and Guide, as well as the Arab American News, a really great source of information about all kinds of things in Dearborn, not just Arab American related issues. But those issues are important to Dearborn, too, and I think everybody should find out about that community if you don't already know about it. Yep. Okay.
Yep.
Is that it, John?
Well, I just want to mention again, I like to sign off by saying, remember everyone deployed. Wear red on Fridays to remember everyone deployed. Okay. Thank you. Thank you.
And eventually we won't have to pull those flags down to half-mast on anymore, too, I hope.
That's right.
How long has, I think, since we don't use the top half of the flagpole, if you just cut the flagpole in half, huh? What do you think? No, that wouldn't work.
No, I don't think so.
That's not the same thing at all. No. All right. That's all for the new WHFR Journal. It's WHFR Dearborn. Here it is. You've been waiting for it now for a minute and a half. Here is Highway 61 with Kitty Love.